Yo, what's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Buzzer Beaters, an NBA-dedicated podcast brought to you by GremlingsMedia.com. You can find us on pretty much any podcast outlet there is out there. You name it, you can find us, Facebook, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, whatever. But also make sure you also check us out at GremlingsMedia.com. If this is your first episode, well, we're actually going on our 34th episode. And actually, the last couple of episodes have been probably or two of our largest viewed episodes in a while. So, and I think it's because I think a lot of people like the topic that we're talking about. So what we do typically is we go about 3 to 4 topics a week with the intent of going about an hour. And sometimes we go over, sometimes we go under. For the most part, we're pretty much an hour and some change usually. But we essentially just talk about basketball. Mainly about NBA because that's what's going on. But sometimes we dibble and dabble in the NCAA men's, and then sometimes we dibble and dabble in the WNBA when it's relevant. But for the most part, it is an NBA dedicated podcast. So for this week, by the way, I'm Eddie Aparicio. This is Anthony Tuan Corral, my coach. We got to talk about that. But anyway, we are also known as the Cisco Kids because we're both from San Francisco, right? So we just, you know, play on the word Cisco Kids. But anyway, so what we're going to talk about this week, we talked about last week, the top 4 teams in each of the conferences. And this week, we're going to talk about some of the surging teams, some of the teams that are not necessarily in the top 4, but are making a case to potentially break the top 4. So we're going to talk about 5 teams, 3 from the East and 2 for the West. We're going to talk about that first. And then the second topic is what we've been talking about. This is the 3rd week of this topic that we've been talking about. And it's essentially we're on this quest to determine the best one-on-one player of all time, as well as the best divisional team of all time. So we have talked about the Southwest Conference last week, the Southwest Conference of the Western Conference the first week. And then last week, we talked about the Southeast Conference of the Eastern Conference. And this week, we're going to talk about the Pacific Division, which is going to be an interesting conversation, man, because this
is
stacked, right? It's stacked.
Yeah.
So that's going to be our
I didn't know where to go.
Yeah. And then that's the second topic. And then the last topic is something that we, you know, Twan and I have been doing every show. We had this contest that we started in the beginning of the season where we drafted, you know, some rookies from our fantasy teams. It's essentially a fantasy league against each other, right? And then we also picked how the teams were going to finish in the conference, in each of the conferences. And then we assigned like a point system for that. And every week we review it just to kind of see the trend. No more than 5 minutes usually, but we sometimes, you know, banter a little bit during that time. But for the most part,
I do want to add, Eddie, just something that I think hasn't been spoken. About every month or so, also, we run numbers on all the rookies, right?
Just
how they're all doing overall against each other, right? So if you're just new to the show and you're just watching this as your very first episode, we don't only talk about our rookies, but we do only do that topic about once a month, once every 3 to 4 weeks, somewhere in that range. Just to kind of see how we're doing against the field and how overall the field's doing. I just wanted to throw that in there in case you're watching.
Yeah, for sure. And it's interesting because the NBA just came out with their rookie ladder again this week, which I didn't necessarily look at yet, but it's not the time. So we'll, you know, it'll change again. So, I'll probably record what they talked about or what they listed for this time. Then when time comes in February, when we visit it again, we'll kind of see how it's changed. But anyway, we are live. And that's something I forgot to point out in the beginning is that we are live because we want to hear from you. We want to get your comments, your questions, you know, your insight on some of the things you'd like us to talk about. Maybe you don't agree with some of the things we talked about. It's okay. We've had that. We've had a lot of people tell us, you know, we're fame whores because we're talking about LeBron, whatever, right?
I don't even talk about him.
We haven't talked about him in a while, but anyway, so let's go ahead and get started, man. We're going to talk about we're going to do a review of the surging teams in the East and the West. So Twan, you have like a spreadsheet that will kind of help illustrate, you know, for the conversation that we have at hand. But it's essentially the one that shows the surging teams tab. Yeah. And you probably want to blow it up. Share. Yeah.
Give me 1 second and I will do that.
All right. So as Twan is bringing that up, so the teams that we're going to talk about, there are 3 teams in the East. You can play, right on, man. You can see it. So maybe, maybe a little bit. Yeah, there we go. Perfect, man. So what we're noting here and what you're seeing here is that you're going to see the numbers next to the team name, and that's where they're seated today. Okay, so the Milwaukee Bucks are the 4th, Indiana Pacers are the 5th, and the Detroit Pistons are the 9th. And the reason why we went ahead and outlined these or called these guys out is because if you look at the far right column, you see how they're doing in their last 10. The Milwaukee Bucks have essentially turned their season around.
Yes, they have.
A huge turnaround. I mean, they started out 2-8, man, 6 games below .500. And you and I were talking about what the hell's wrong with this team, man. It's like they have this talent, they have this, I mean, all-world player in Giannis Antetokounmpo, and then they have, you know, Damian Lillard. And for whatever reason, they just weren't meshing. Of course, they were also missing Chris Middleton. You know, he's been in and out of the lineup. But, you know, they've made some adjustments, man. And you know, Giannis essentially had a team meeting early on in the season and just pretty much called this team out. And, you know, I think that worked because Giannis is one of these kind of gregarious, affable kind of personality types. And I think when he kind of exploded on people, they were like, okay, people take notice. We got to listen to this guy. And all of a sudden, everybody started following suit, man. So, but just to, you know, Lillard and Giannis seem to figure something out. They have some chemistry, right? But I think a big adjustment that was made is that they inserted Taurean Prince and Andre Jackson into the starting lineup. And these guys are defensive-minded guys. And that complements, you know, like a Brook Lopez, right? He's another guy that's also very defensive-minded. So you have three defensive-minded guys, and then you have two guys that are offensive-oriented in Damian Lillard and Giannis. And the whole offense just runs through both of those guys. The Giannis-Damian pick and roll is hard to stop, for sure, right? But then Giannis is the type of guy who's just going to break defenses down and just draw and kick to the outside shooters. You know, Taurean Prince is a decent outside shooter. And then we all know Damian Lillard is probably close to the Steph Curry level, but not there. Pretty close. Yeah. And then we know Brook Lopez has completely revolutionized this game because he used to be like this low post threat all the time. And now he's like this big 3-and-D center and highly coveted by a lot of teams in the NBA. So they have definitely turned things around. And I would say also their bench, man. Okay. Chris Middleton is now coming off the bench, which is, I think, a good adjustment, right? And they probably needed to do that just because he's always hurt, right? Then they got this Bobby Portis. Bobby Portis is like a really good offensive-minded guy. And he just – I think that rotation, those five – those seven players, I think has really just changed the team. And I think their chemistry is great, man. So what are your thoughts, man?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you in regards to – I thought that, you know, at first glance, you know, just Middleton coming back to the lineup kind of settled everything down. And that was – kind of what but as I looked a little deeper, you're right. I think, you know, the two players that they brought in, which is Prince and Jackson into the starting lineup, I think their defensive mindedness and one of the benefits of Brook Lopez, as you mentioned, kind of revolutionizing his game is that he's forced to pull out a big man or a fifth player out to the perimeter. And when you do that, by the way, something the Warriors have yet to figure out, but that's a whole other topic.
So
that allows Giannis to kind of attack the hoop, right? It gives him a little bit more availability in the lane. And if and when they want to collapse that, then like you said, you got Lillard out there, you know, you got Prince out there who can shoot okay, and you got Lopez out there, depending on where they collapse from. So I think that they've figured out a couple of things. And I think, like you said, I think Lillard and Giannis have figured out how deadly they can be on the pick and roll. They didn't know it before, but now, you know, on the defensive end, they're a little bit more aggressive on the defensive end. And then on the offensive end, I think they're a little bit more like settled. And in terms of their shooting, they figured out a system on how to attack or how to shoot, depending on what the defense is doing.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting though, Tuan, is if we look at the ratings of the team, right? You know, they're the 12th ranked offensive rated team, and then they're the 8th ranked defensive rated team in the league. And what's interesting is when they were first in the beginning of the season, when they were on that 2-6 kind of or 2-8 slump, their defense was rated right around the 20s, man. And they stepped it up big time. Right. And I think it's that big adjustment that they made on their starting lineup and inserting defensive minded guys. I mean, Andre Jackson, man, that dude has got hops. Have you seen that dude? He's got hops, man.
Yeah, he can get up.
He can get up, man. He's just long and he's just, you know, his defense will come around. And I think it's kind of the trend of the NBA now, right? That you know, a lot of these GMs are drafting defensive minded guys first, and then they'll learn the offense later. It's better to have in their minds defense figured out first because that's what wins rather than offense, right? It's harder.
Well, and you and I have talked about this. I mean, defense travels better, defensive players, you know, for those of you that haven't played, I mean, you know, a lot of the reasons that offensive great players don't play good defense is because it takes a lot of energy to play defense. It actually, in my mind, takes, I don't want to say 2-to-1, but it's definitely more energy to play defense than it is to play offense. Because it's always harder trying to figure out what the other person is doing, you know, than when you're playing offense, you know exactly what you're doing. So your energy is more centralized. So in that sense, it is better to look for defensive players, a defensive team. I think as long as the fundamentals on that defensive player are good, and you and I have talked about it, players like Kawhi, who started off the defensive player, Stephon Castle, who's getting better by the day, you know, Jimmy Butler, they're all defensive minded players who pick up offense down the road, and they're just more complete players, you know? And so, you know, even Klay Thompson to a degree was, you know, well-balanced between defense and offense early in his career, not as much now, but back in the day. And so, I think you're right. I think going defensive minded is a lot better, especially if you're a younger player. That's going to travel and you're going to be a little more stable or a little more consistent, which is really what coaches want. They want their teams to be consistent. And when you're a little more defensive focused, you're going to have a more consistent team.
Yep. And you know, what's interesting, bro, is that you and I, we had the Bucks. Well, actually, I take that back. We had the Bucks. You had the Bucks as the fifth team, and I had the Bucks as the fourth team. So they came out of the doldrums, man. Right? They climbed up the ranks. They're now the fourth ranked team. So my question to you here: do you see these guys staying there or surging further up?
Good question.
And who's above them right now? It's the Knicks, the Celtics,
Cleveland, Boston, and New York. No, I don't. Maybe they can catch New York, but I'm going to say no. Not that they're not going to be good and not that they couldn't win. I just think, no, I'm going to say no. I'm going to say they've hit about
a stay where they're at. You're going to say they stay where they're at. Yeah. I would say that they could definitely threaten New York for sure. They're going to be in that 3 or 4 range. I think this is the lowest I think we'll see them from here on out is 4.
Yep.
I think we can see them as high as 3. I don't think they're going to catch the Celtics nor the Cavs. Nobody will. Those are the top 2 teams in the East, right?
Correct.
But anyway, you can see that their net rating is 2.93. They're 10th ranked team in that category in the entire league. So they definitely improved their team, man. This team is a team to watch, and they're definitely a surging team.
No, I agree. You know, part of what we were talking about early in the season, are they just old? You know, are they just – well, that was one of the things that was roaming at least through my head, and clearly they've gotten an influx of energy, and that's a good thing, you know.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think fourth is about the lowest they'll go. I mean, you know, we've got another hot team in Indiana there, so maybe Indiana challenges them for the fourth. You know, possibly they both, either one of them challenge New York for the third. That's all possible, but you're right. Higher than the 1 or 2 seed, I don't think they're going to get there. And I could begin to formulate an argument where I don't think Boston's going to catch Cleveland.
I don't think so either, man.
Yeah,
I don't think so either, man. But it's a good segue that you did with the Pacers, because that's the next team on our list. And, you know, the Pacers, like the Bucks, they were struggling early. And, you know, it all kind of fell on Halliburton. And it's interesting that Halliburton was on Team USA. And, you know, we don't know what kind of an impact that had on him, but it definitely seemed to have some kind of an impact on his legs, because he wasn't able to shoot as well as he had been in the past. He seems to have gotten it back now, right? But what I'll tell you is that the Pacers start on December 8th. They were 10-15, okay? 10-15, 5 games below 500. Nobody saw this. They're like, oh, my God, what's wrong with this team, right? The only real difference was that Aaron Nesmith wasn't in the starting lineup, and he doesn't make that much of a difference. But for whatever reason, I think it's probably the combination of Halliburton and Nesmith and then having to, you know, kind of, you know, function without Nesmith, and they inserted Ben Mathurin in the starting lineup. And he's more of an offensive-oriented guy. And Nesmith's more of a defensive-oriented guy. They just, I think, had a hard time meshing. But when they started out at 10-15, they have gone since 14-4, right? That's 10 games above 500.
Yep, that's.
And what's interesting to note here is that if you look at their ratings, right, last year they were the second-rated team offensively entirely. They were second only to the Boston Celtics, who had a record year on offensive net rating, not necessarily defense, but both of those, offense and net rating, they were number one, Boston. But then you have the Pacers, they were number two, but their defense was kind of like in the 26, 27 range, right? Yeah. Now look at their defense now. It's improved. They've gone up, all right? They've gone up, like, not significantly, but they're going in the right direction. And then you're seeing that their offense has also kind of dipped a little bit too. And I think what's happening is that they're realizing that they can't put all their energy in just offense alone, right? So I think that's probably one of the things that's kind of transpired here. But, you know, the three guys, we dubbed them Run TMP, you know, Tyrese, Miles Turner, and then Pascal Siakam. That's the TMP, right? Run TMP at a playoff of Run TMC. Those guys are carrying the team, man. I mean, those guys, those three guys alone, you know, make up more than 90% of their offense. Then you sprinkle in like a Mathurin, you sprinkle in, a McConnell, you sprinkle in like a Ben Shepherd. You know, they have a very deep team, and it's they're fortunate that they've maintained this level without, you know, their depth that they didn't have with, you know, losing those three centers. They lost Jalen Smith, they lost Isaiah Jackson, and of course, James Wiseman, the latter two to season-ending Achilles injuries. But this team is on a roll, man, and we all kind of thought that they were the team to watch, you know, coming into this year because of what they did last year, and they pretty much were, in my opinion, the biggest threat to the Celtics in the playoffs. So what are your thoughts, bro?
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, one thing that kind of was chewing through my mind on the Halliburton slow start, you know, and I'll talk more about this when we get to the Western Conference, but was it a mindset playing in the Olympics? You know, did he lose faith because he wasn't playing? You know, I know that, you know, we early in the season, we jokingly said, you know, he was picking Curry's brain on what Curry does, and Curry takes naps, and he started to take naps, and, you know, he jokingly said, yeah, no more naps. But I think embedded in that jokingness is, I think maybe he started to spend a lot of time trying to emulate other players and what they're doing, and maybe lost a little focus on what he does. And I think he's kind of centered himself again. You know, he's kind of focused more on his strengths, you know, and what he can do. And I think that's been a big turn because, you know, the other players, I mean, they're, you know, Halliburton's the key on that. To my opinion, he's the key on that team, right? And so, you know,
he is. He makes that team.
And so if he's going to do well, they're all young. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I'm saying he makes that team function. He's the he's the centerpiece.
Yeah. So I think his turnaround is the key. You know, Pascal Siakam, obviously an ex-champion with the Raptors. You know, Miles Turner has been a very good player for many years. I think you're right. I think they're going to challenge. It's going to be really interesting to watch those top five, right? And one that's dropped recently, which, you know, we're not going to talk about today, but was the Orlando Magic, who I think also, you know, if once, you know, they kind of get everything going again smoothly, I think are going to be involved in the mix as well. And I think you got six really interesting teams in the Eastern Conference. You know, today I was listening to the radio, you know, and the personality on the radio kept saying, you know, oh, the East is weak. The East is weak. I'm like, I kept saying to myself, yeah, I don't think so. I don't subscribe to that mentality. You know?
No way, man.
You know, I'm looking at Cleveland. They're very formidable. Boston's the ex-champion. You know, Milwaukee, Indiana, you know, the Orlando Magic, the New York Knicks. I think they're all formidable teams. And I think that, you know, I would say, and I'd be reluctant, maybe with the exception of the Pacers. And I don't even think it's an exception. I think any of those top five teams could win the championship, could win the whole thing.
On the East, you're talking about in the East.
Yeah, on the East. Yeah, I think all of them can represent the East in the finals.
Yeah, you know, it's a good thought, you know, but in my opinion, I think the Cavs and the Boston Celtics are a tier above these guys. Mainly, I think just because deeper, both of those teams are very deep, and they're both very, very good offensively and defensively, you know, combined. Whereas these teams right here, they don't necessarily have, they're not in the same level from an offensive defensive standpoint, but you know, they're. You know, they're respectable, right? And we all know the Bucks can get there because they have won a championship, right? So,
I guess what I'm saying though, Eddie, is like let's take a look at like the West, for example. You know, would you be shocked if Houston beat Orlando in a playoff series? Would you be shocked if Memphis beat? I mean, not Orlando. Sorry, if the Houston beat Oklahoma City, or if Memphis beat Oklahoma City, would that be a shock to you? Or would you say, you know, that's a pretty
shock.
That you'd be shocked. See, I think I would expect Oklahoma to win, you know?
Yes.
And so I look at these teams, you know, Milwaukee, for example, it wouldn't shock me if they could beat either Cleveland or Boston. It wouldn't shock me. I mean, do I think those teams are favorite? Yeah. But I think the gap is a lot closer than it has been in years.
I know what you're saying, but I would say that most analysts, it would say that that would be an upset because the way that Boston, yeah, you know,
well, an upset is just means that the underdog beat the favorite,
right? But you're saying like, the gap isn't very large, is what you're
correct.
Saying.
I wouldn't be like, holy crap, the Commanders just beat the freaking Lions. Like, I wouldn't be like that, you know? I'd be like,
yeah, okay.
Yeah. I mean, they should have won, but I could see them doing it.
Yeah. No, I hear you, man. I hear you. I hear you, bro. So, but yeah, you know, the Pacers are an up and coming team. Let's go to this dovetail into our third team in the East before we go to the West. And that is the team that you picked in the early beginning of the season. You know, we have a little bet on that, and you're definitely beating the crap out of me right now with the emergence of the Detroit Pistons, right? We had, Twan and I had a contest before the season began that, you know, looking at the teams that they were both in the kind of lower half of the conference, both the Blazers and the Pistons, and they both had made moves to get better in the offseason. And Twan and I had made a bet that, you know, I said, hey, man, you know, wait, the Blazers, I think, you know, they're a pretty good team and they have good youth. You know, they just been injured for the most part. And then you commented the Detroit Pistons, you know, they added a bunch of vets, you know, that complements the youth, you know, centered around Cade Cunningham, right? And they have, you know, Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, they have Jalen Duren, you know, these three young, you know, really good players. And now they brought in two, savvy vets and Tim Hardaway as a junior, as well as Tobias Harris. And that's
right. Don't forget about my boy Beef Stew. Don't forget about Beef Stew.
Yeah, he comes off the bench, though. He definitely comes off the bench, though. Yeah.
He brings that toughness, you know.
For sure. And then you got Marcus Sasser, who comes off the bench, you know, the guy from Houston. I mean, this team is fun to watch, man. And they're, you know, you see that the record, they're one game above 500, which is good to be a ninth, you know, in the ninth position in the East and, you know, in the West. That kind of puts you in like the 11th spot. But, you know, but I wanted to point out the Pistons as a team that's up and coming, because if you look at the very last right column, they've won 7 out of their 10 last games, right? And that's respectable. Now, if you look at their net rating as well as their offensive and defensive rating, they're the ones that are probably don't have that much of a gap. I mean, the Bucks only have like a 4, you know, level gap between their offense and defense. The same thing goes with the Pistons. They're just like kind of a lower tier. But this is an up-and-coming team, man. They're a young team. And Cade Cunningham is a player, man. And, you know, I think you were asking me if I thought that earlier, like maybe in the season, if I thought Cade Cunningham was an up-and-coming player. And I'm like, hell yeah, that guy's – he's a really good – because he's a matchup problem. He's 6'8", man. And he's long, and he's athletic. And, you know, he's got the junkyard dog in him. You know, he's just a good player, man. So – good kudos to this team and good call on calling these guys out. But what are your thoughts, man, in general with this team?
No, I mean, and by the way, just a little clarification. As of today, they're in the seventh seed. So Detroit is in the seventh seed today. So just noting that. Two levels higher. But, yeah, no, I mean, you know, Detroit's kind of been this, you know, there's a couple of teams that I looked at that thought, you know, and San Antonio in the West, Detroit in the East, you know, Portland – I don't know, you know, I don't know if I got a bias against them, even though I looked at the talent Detroit has. I thought Tobias Harris, you know, he's done pretty good in Philly in the past.
Yeah.
I thought that was a key move. Like I said, you know, I joke about Beef Stew, but you know, they got some bigs, they got the pieces, you know, they got pieces that they can build on pieces. And so I looked at them and I said, you know, they might do all right. You know, like obviously I think they're still a year or two away from, you know, even being a regular in the playoffs, but you know, they might fall off or whatever, but you know, I like them. I like watching them. You know, I watched them play the Warriors and they gave the Warriors all that and then some, and you know, and so, yeah, like I said, you know, I've enjoyed watching.
Yeah, me too, man. They're definitely a team on the watch right now because of their youth and because of Cade Cunningham, you know. You know, I play FanDuel, right? And, you know, and I talk about it, you know, here and there on this podcast. But, you know, if you look at, like, usually, like, the players that accumulate a lot of stats are the guys that cost the most. And, you know, for FanDuel, for instance, you have 60,000 budget to fill up 9 slots on your team, right? The most expensive guy that's out there is Nikola Jokic. He's roughly about $13,000 if you want to put him in your lineup, right? So, but Cade Cunningham is $10,000. So that gives you an idea of, like, okay, relatively, this guy is pretty good. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is hovering right around 11,800, 11,900. And we know that guy's an MVP candidate, right? So you have those two guys with Jokic and Shea being right around there. Giannis is around $11,700. Karl Anthony Towns, roughly about $10,000. These are, big players. And then Cade Cunningham, you're seeing him at $10,000. That's going to show you that this guy is definitely a stat-stuffing machine, right? He does a lot on the court, right? Yeah. So, but good call on that, man. So, but let's dovetail into the West, because we have two teams only in the West that I thought deserved to be on this list. Yep. But one thing I want to point out before we talk about the Los Angeles Clippers, if you look at the net rating difference between the East and the West, you look at the Sacramento Kings, they are the eighth seed. They have a net rating of 2.71, and then you have the Milwaukee Bucks, who are the fourth seed at 2.93. Not far off, man. And you can see that the Detroit Pistons, now they're number seven. Their net rating is probably right around negative something. I don't know what it is now, but it's probably right around there. But you can see a seven seed is barely a zero, right? And then you can see the difference. You can see the difference, right? Right there. So, all right. So
you're right. I mean, the West is still more competitive than the East. I'm thinking you got a handful of teams in the East. I mean, if you go to the upper, and obviously you don't have that data, but if you go to the top four teams in each division, I'm sure that then you're going to get some balance there in terms of overall rankings.
Yeah, and we did that last week where we kind of noted that the Eastern Conference was, their top three or four teams from an offensive rating standpoint resided in the East, and on the West, it was the top four. In the defense, right? Very defensive oriented, conference versus the East being, more offensive, which is kind of a flip flop from years past, right? But let's go to the Western Conference, man. So the Los Angeles Clippers. Now, this is a team, early in the season that I thought was a team to watch. You kind of low on them,
I was.
Yeah, you had them. Let's see. You had them around the 12th seed. That's where you thought they would be. I thought that they would be around the ninth seed. I mean, we're right now, I'm closer than you are, but I thought this team was still, sneaky good. And it's showing, man, because they're a very defensive-minded team. If you look at their ratings, they look very close to what last week when we looked at the Orlando Magic, right? Yeah. The Orlando Magic were like 28-2 on the, the offense. And now these guys, the Clippers, are 22-3, right? And what's interesting, we already pointed this out, is that last week when we were covering the Orlando Magic, they were the fourth seed. Now they're the eighth seed, right? So they've fallen out completely, out of the top four just in 1 week, right? Or two games, right? So the East top four or five are definitely tight as the top 11 in the West, right? But, the Clippers are a very defensive-oriented team, right? They if you look at the roster, other than Norman Powell and James Harden, everybody else is a defensive-minded player, right? Really, for the most part. You have guys like Derek Jones, Amir Coffey, Chris Dunn, Nicholas Batum, and then you have Ivica Zubac, right? This guy is an underrated center, man.
I like him, yeah.
He does all of the dirty work, and he's a big boy, dude, right? He does all of the dirty work and then some, and he scores double-digit points and gets double-digit rebounds almost every game, right? And if you want to look at the FanDuel as a representative of like how good a player is, he's roughly about $7,400 usually, roughly around there. So that gives you an idea of how much this guy does as a center. He's a very, very good center. What's interesting now is that Kawhi Leonard is back.
Correct.
But they're gradually bringing him in. He's getting he started out with 15 minutes and 18 minutes, it's 20, 22 minutes, slowly getting there, right? He isn't doing as much as he does, because the less minutes you play, when you're typically a high minute player, it takes you a while to get going again, right? And Kawhi Leonard, we all know he's an all-world player when he's healthy, and that team now is very scary once this guy gets 100%. Very, very scary. They're very, very scary. I think this team is going to continue to rise, man. In my opinion, they might even battle for the top four spot. What are your thoughts, bro?
I don't disagree, but my concern is and will continue to be if and when Kawhi gets hurt again, right? And that's I'm just looking at previous history, right? And this is my concern with the Clippers. They developed synergy without Kawhi. Now Kawhi comes back. They have to disrupt that synergy, right? And then, and again, I'm not hoping that anything happens. I hope Kawhi plays every single game from here on out and they do as good as they can possibly do. But my concern is simply Kawhi gets hurt again. It impacts the synergy, and now they have to regroup and figure things out again. And so that's been my – that's why I'm low on the Clippers. If I felt like they were going to be healthy for 72 games a year, then I'm like, yeah, I think they're, you know, they're definitely a playoff squad. But with Kawhi coming in and out, that's where my concerns lie. And I think, and you know what? And I will acknowledge this. I didn't think Powell would play as good as he's done. You know, I know I've always respected Lou as a coach, but I think he's done an exceptional job this year with the Clippers. So I think that they are, with Kawhi out, they played way better than I thought they would. I thought they were going to suffer, especially losing Paul George and kind of all of those things kind of impacting them. And so I do want to give them their credit. They've played a lot better than I thought they would. But now what my concern is, as it continues to be, is the yo-yo of Kawhi Leonard being in and out of the lineup.
Yeah, and I think that's why they gradually brought him back, is because, you know, he has been injury prone in the past. And the thing is that they have proved that at least for half the season, they can be a respectable team without Kawhi Leonard, right? What we don't know is if Kawhi Leonard is out for a longer period of time, if this team as currently constructed can be as competitive as they've shown. And, you know, a lot of analysts, experts out there will say, yeah, I would bet against that because, you know, James Harden is an older player, right? He's kind of at the sunset of his career, right? And that's a big load for that guy to carry. You know, Norman Powell, he's predominantly been more of a six-man player, right? He's kind of like what Ben Mathurin was for the Pacers, because now Ben Mathurin is in the lineup. Although Aaron Nesmith came back, and Aaron Nesmith, interestingly enough, came in and started when he came back, only played 9 minutes. They lost that game, then they inserted Ben Mathurin again in the starting lineup, bringing Nesmith off the bench, and they won that game. So that might be an adjustment now that they're not going to start Aaron Nesmith. But I wanted to bring that up only because Norman Powell was essentially what Ben Mathurin was, right? And now they put him in the starting lineup, and he's flourished. I mean, he has flourished. So, yeah,
he has flourished. Correct. So yeah, they're gonna be my kind of hot and cold team to watch for the rest of the season to see where they're at. I think, you know, little by little, things are starting to settle in terms of who's going to be where. There's some exceptions still. You know, I think I'm curious in the East if Philadelphia still has something to say here, although time is running away from them. But, you know, speaking of injury prone, you know, Paul George has a history of being hurt, and Embiid is always hurt, you know, which is tough to watch because I do like their two young guys, you know, the point guard Maxey and their rookie. Who's been playing really well, you know, and so that's
McCain. McCain.
Yeah, McCain. Yeah, so that's going to be.
He hasn't played in a while though. He hasn't been played.
Yeah,
he hasn't played
but that's going to be interesting to watch them. But I think outside of that, a lot of teams have began to settle, and you know, and the Clippers are going to be one that I think has the potential to, you know, shock some people if they stay at this seed, or I can see them still dropping even as far out of the play-in game. You know, just depending on Kawhi Leonard and what his consistency is going to be. But we'll see.
We'll see, man. But they have impressed so far, and we have to put them as a surging team, even though they're not as good as the, they're probably the worst on this list as far as their last 10, because they won 6 out of their last 10.
Correct.
Everybody else has been at least 7, right? So, but you know, they're one of the only two surging teams in the West, other outside of the top four, right? And that's why I wanted to bring up some teams that are not necessarily top. They weren't top four last week, but they cracked it or were on the verge of cracking it this week.
I agree with you. Yeah, they haven't been necessarily on a hot streak, but they've kind of had a hot season so far. They've been playing above their weight, as they would say in boxing.
I agree, man. I agree. So let's go down and dovetail to our last team.
Yes.
Conference. And this is the all of a sudden, you know, very dangerous Sacramento Kings. Probably the biggest turnaround that we have seen in the West that resembles the turnaround that the Milwaukee Bucks did earlier in the season. This team started out at 13-18. They had high expectations for them because they last year were a play-in team. They actually lost to get into the playoffs against, I think, the Lakers. So, you know, but, you know, this team is, you know, they brought in DeMar DeRozan, you know, compliment, you know, Sabonis as well as De'Aaron Fox and, you know, of course, Keegan Murray. And, you know, there was high hopes for this team to be better than they were. And they fired Mike Brown and then, you know, brought in the interim coach, Doug Christie, formerly of Pepperdine University, and played for the Lakers, I think the Clippers. He played for multiple teams in his NBA career. But this guy has turned this team around, man. They have gone 9-2 since he has taken over as head coach of the team, and they've gone 9-1 in their last 10, right? So this is one of the biggest changes. I mean, one of the biggest turnarounds we have seen in quite some time. And one thing to note is that, you know, this guy, Keon Ellis is a guy who's definitely was kind of showing some promise last year. He's a very good defensive player. And I think that, you know, Mike Brown played Keon Ellis mostly off the bench. And then, you know, Doug Christie has actually put him in the starting lineup at times now, right? Mike Brown dibbled and dabbled a little bit on that. But I would say that Doug Christie has put him, he's played Keon Ellis more. And I think this guy has been a big key to their turnaround because he's a defensive minded guy, kind of like a Davion Mitchell was, right? Davion Mitchell was, you know, what is it? Off night. That was his nickname.
Yeah, off night. Yep.
Yeah. Off night.
The best nicknames I've heard.
I know it's a good nickname, but the thing, he's a smaller guy, man. He's not that big. Right. Whereas Keon Ellis is a bigger, more athletic Davion Mitchell. Right. So he's a bigger guy, but you know, but what also has happened is that, you know, Sabonis, you know, DeRozan and Fox, those guys are starting to mesh now, and they're starting to play well together. And, you know, that's what they were hoping to happen. And it just kind of happened a little bit too late. And who knows if Mike Brown just kind of lost his voice in the locker room. I don't know. It's kind of surprising after they re-upped him, right, to kind of fire him. But they do. It looks like the right move right now, but it remains to be seen, man. So what are your thoughts, man?
This whole situation fascinates me. Because at face value, you know, are we to believe that Mike Brown is such a horrible coach that they just got so, like, was his offensive and defensive game plan so bad that he was keeping them down? Or is Doug Christie, you know, up and coming coach, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it probably hovers somewhere around mental, you know, the mentals of the game. The energy around the game, this in particular got me wondering, you know, I look at Philadelphia underperforming. I look at, up to this point, Minnesota underperforming. I look at, and I'm wondering, like, how much the coach
plays influences a role. That.
Yeah. Know, huh? And so I just think to me, this is because they're like a night and day team. Almost immediately after he left, everyone, and I didn't hear any gripes or, you know, like, I've never heard Mike Brown's a bad guy. And
no,
you know, this doesn't make sense to me to some degree. It doesn't make sense, like, how much better they've gotten. And so I look at this and I don't know what your thoughts are, but it does fascinate me just from a human psyche perspective. You know, there's been some rumblings that, you know, De'Aaron Fox and Mike Brown weren't getting along, and, you know, they've had some conversations or whatever, and so Sacramento acted swiftly, and right now they're reaping the rewards. Whether this lasts, you know, because, you know, like for example, you know, you and I have always seen, like, in baseball or in basketball, not so much in football, but in those two sports, you bring in a rookie and nobody has any numbers on him, or no one has any data on him. So he has a game or two where you're like, holy crap, this guy's really good. And then the league figures him out, and lo and behold, that individual gets kind of ranked where he probably should have been. And I'm wondering if some of that is in effect here, you know, but I'm a little in awe.
Perplexed.
I'm a little just perplexed in.
Yeah.
That's
why this is happening, right? I mean,
yeah, like, why? I don't quite get it.
It happens in football. You see it in football when the coaching change is made, that there is a immediate reaction by the team the following week, and they usually play a lot harder for whatever reason. It almost always happens, man, which is interesting. And it's just a different voice, you know, and sometimes it just could be that. Sometimes the players need a different voice, because some of the times some of these long-term coaches, they lose their voice after some time. The only one that I think that has done very well with that is Greg Popovich. He's probably one of the only coaches long-term where his voice doesn't wear out on the teams. They respect him. Everybody respects that guy. Same thing like a Phil Jackson, right? His voice didn't wear out. You can argue that Steve Kerr's voice is wearing out right now in the Warriors. You can argue that. I'm not saying that, nor has there been any speculation or you hear things about it. But, you know, the Warriors are not playing – like everybody thought they would. And, you know, they don't have the same talent as they have in the past. But, you know, I just wanted to bring his name up because you brought up other names up that were the coach, you know, they may have, their voice may have just worn out then on their own.
No, no, I hear you. But when I look at the Warriors per se, like I don't, like anyone could argue that roster may be a playoff team, maybe not, right? They definitely started off hot. The Warriors did. But like, let's take Minnesota, for example. Okay. Minnesota, yeah. I think, has a lot of correlation to the Kings, right? Minnesota was in the Western Conference final last year. They're a hot team. They, at the time, made a trade that I thought, hey, maybe they won that trade. Now, right. I don't think that anymore. But at the time, I thought, hey, they got DiVincenzo. They got Julius Randle. You know, they had Rudy Gobert and they had Towns. They had a little bit of an overlap at the big. They kind of adjusted and put people more in their normal positions. But all of a sudden, Minnesota, you know, they're starting to move a little bit, but they go up and they go down and they go up. And so I'm starting to think, well, do they need another voice? Do they need someone else, you know, in there coaching them? Because I kind of see a similarity between Minnesota and Sacramento. Uh-oh, what's up? Clap on, clap off. And so, you know, that's just, to me, it just got me thinking about the psyche of basketball, you know, and the psychology of these players and why that matters. And I knew it was going to make a difference, but we've got a 12-game sample here or a 11-game sample. They're 9-2, right, in 11 games. That's pretty damn impressive.
That's a big sample size. It's 1/8 of the season, essentially, right there.
Correct.
Yeah, so this team. So let me ask you them. Do you see this team continuing to rise or roughly where they're at right now?
They have the talent to be better than where they're at. I'll leave it. So if they play to their talent, then yes, I think, you know, I don't know where I had them. I have to remember, but my guess is they'd be somewhere in the 6-7 seed, somewhere in that range.
Yeah. You had the Kings in the 8th and I had them in the 9th.
So they're right around where, that's fine. I mean, there's a lot of tougher teams ahead of them. There's a lot of youth ahead of them, teams that are figuring things out, you know, and there's teams below them that should be higher, right? Minnesota being one of them.
Yep.
Right. So Minnesota could sneak up on them. You know, Phoenix is down there. I mean, we could have, you know, there's a lot of rumors around potentially Jimmy Butler going over to Phoenix. We'll see what that looks like.
Yeah.
You know, San Antonio's been up and down, you know, so we'll see. But if they go higher, it won't be more than 2 seeds. I'm talking at the end of the day. They may go shoot up to 5 or 4 and then come down again.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely are playing well. Let's see if they can sustain this, man. So, all right, man. Yeah. So we covered this in 43 minutes, man. I thought this wasn't going to be enough, but we did it, man. Now we got to go on to the next segment, man. And this is going to be the fun one, right? This is going to be, as I mentioned in the introduction, this is our third week of a 6-week process to essentially establish who we think is the best one-on-one player of all time, as well as the best divisional team of all time. Last week, we covered the Orlando Magic, the Atlanta Hawks, the Charlotte Hornets, the Miami Heat, and the Washington Wizards. And from those teams, we picked Shaquille O'Neal from Orlando. We picked Dominique from the Atlanta Hawks. We picked Aaron Davis from the Charlotte Hornets. We picked Dwayne Wade from the Miami Heat. And then we picked Wes Unseld for the Washington Wizards as the best starting 5. And then the one-on-one player from last week that we thought was the best amongst this group was Dominique Wilkins. Yep. This week, we are covering a very, very heavy talent-laden Western Conference Pacific Division, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Kings, the Suns, and the Warriors. And we're going to go ahead and pick, you know, we're going to settle on one player because we might differ, but that's all right, to come up with a starting 5. And, you know, if we need to go ahead and massage it later, we'll do it. But for right now, we're just picking the top from each of these groups. So
this was not easy.
Let me ask you, where do you want to start, bro?
Well, I say we leave the Lakers for last because that's going to be, in my mind, at least it was the hardest for me. So let's start with the Clippers because I'm interested in who you nominated. who you nominated for the Clippers. Not so much your final decision, although I will, but who were your nominees for the Clippers?
Okay, so you know the Clippers have been devoid of talent for a long time, man. Like significant talent, right? Probably one of their most notable players in their history didn't really play for the Clippers, and that's Bob McAdoo. He played for the Braves, right? Which became the Clippers. So he's probably the best player. But I wouldn't probably – nobody really remembers him as a Clipper. So I really can't put him in the name – in the list. Although I just wanted to point out that he might be the best person on the list. But he's not really regarded. Yeah,
statistically speaking, he is the greatest statistical player to play for that organization. I agree.
Correct.
But it was – I think it was four seasons.
Correct. You know,
which wasn't a big sample size.
Correct.
And, and obviously people remember as a Laker and other things, but – but the same as you. I had Bob McAdoo on my list, but I just thought the sample size was too small. And, you know, he was a little removed from that organization. He played with the Buffalo Braves.
Correct.
But, yeah, I'm with you. But I had him on my list.
So I just want to bring him up because, you know, a lot of the hoop heads out there that are listening to us, they know that we can't omit Bob McAdoo. We can't.
Can't.
He's part of that, but we're omitting him from being nominated as the best Clipper, just because I don't think he's regarded as a Clipper in his career as much, right? Yep. As maybe more Laker. I forget who else he might have played for Portland, but anyway, I forgot who he's played.
Yep.
But anyway, the other guys, I'm gonna just bring up these three other guys because they didn't play one freaking minute for the team, but they got drafted by the Clippers. All right,
yeah.
Byron Scott got drafted by the Clippers, and then was traded to the LA Lakers. Antonio McDice, remember him?
Out of
Alabama.
They traded him to Denver on draft night.
They traded him to Denver on draft night. And the last guy I'll bring up that didn't play a lick for the Clippers, but just want to bring up that they drafted him, was Miles Bridges, who's currently playing right now for the Charlotte Hornets, right? Yeah. Those three are not on the list. The guys that I did put on my list, and there's four of them. Danny Manning is one. All right, out of Kansas, excuse me. Lamar Odom out of Rhode Island.
Yes.
All right. And then I had Eric Gordon. And then I had Blake Griffin. And let me ask you, who do you have any of those guys or any additional guys other than those guys?
No, I didn't have Eric Gordon. I did have Lamar Odom. I did have Danny Manning. I also had Griffin. One that has already been taken, and this has been sort of my challenge now as I'm trying to think through this, is one could argue Chris Paul, right? Because Chris Paul had a very high impact, but we kept him as, or at least I kept him as a Hornet, right?
As a Pelican.
And so that's where I kept him. So I'm not double dipping, right? I'm not picking the same player for multiple. I think that we have to just identify one.
Real quick interjection, though. I mean, one could argue that we probably could have and should have probably picked him as a Hornet because he probably had a longer career as a Hornet than a Pelican. But we already made the choice. He's a Pelican.
Correct.
So Baron Davis is the Hornet.
Well, anyway. What we did was the Pelicans were the Hornets. So it was that organization, right? It was the new Hornets. He never played for that organization.
Correct. Well, they restarted it with the Charlotte Bobcats that became the Charlotte Hornets again.
Correct. Right? Correct. I do want to distinct that for anyone that's going, what are you talking about? Well,
You know,
it was the Pelican organization that were the Charlotte Hornets.
Right.
Chris Paul as an asterisk.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I was just going to make the point. Just like the Ravens are the Cleveland Browns, they were no Cleveland.
Correct.
Browns.
Correct.
Anyway, go ahead.
Correct. Which makes things confusing in these types of discussions.
Right. All right. Was there anybody else that I didn't have?
No, that was it. Okay. Chris Paul was the only one that I kind of earmarked. But
okay, so I picked Blake Griffin.
I picked Blake Griffin.
Okay, cool. We settled that. Blake Griffin is the Clipper, right? Yeah. All right. All right. What? Let's go on to the Suns.
Okay.
All right.
All right. So I'll go first.
Okay. Go for it.
All right. So I had five guys. One of which I put a strike through, but I think he's worth noting. Similar to Chris Paul, I had Charles Barkley on there. So Charles Barkley.
Although I think he's more of a Sixer, man.
No, absolutely. I do as well. So I put a strike through to him. I'm not cool.
You're just bringing him up that he played for the
but
Suns.
But I wanted to note in case there's Phoenix Suns fans out there, you're like, you know, Barkley, they went to the finals with Barkley. He was a big part of that, right? So I just wanted to note that, right? Right. But from the Suns that I had, I had Devin Booker, who's a current Sun now. I think he's a very talented player. I think he deserved to be on this list. And then from back in the day, I had Kevin Johnson. So Kevin Johnson, point guard for the Phoenix Suns, you know, had a lot of battles with Tim Hardaway. I'm a Warrior. Obviously, we're Warrior fans. I remember KJ, you know, came out of Berkeley, if I'm not mistaken.
Out of Cal Berkeley.
Out of Berkeley, you know. So Kevin Johnson. Amari Stoudemire. I had Amari Stoudemire there. Kemp twin is what I call him because those guys could just jump out of the building. Amari's also known for his time as a Knick. But, you know, in Phoenix, I think that's where his kind of claim to fame is. And then the guy that I picked also as well, who's, you know, I believe two-time MVP is Steve Nash. So Steve Nash had a couple of stints with Phoenix. He played for, I want to say, 96 to 98. Then he went to the Mavericks and a couple of other teams and then came back and played the bulk of his career with the Phoenix Suns.
Yep. Is that your list?
And want me to say who I picked out of that lot or do you want to?
Let me go through my list.
Yeah.
Right. Go ahead. Okay. Yep. I had more players. All right. Just because I wanted to kind of note some of these players for those Phoenix fans that are listening to us. Everybody that you named, I also had. But the guys that I had in addition, I had Paul Westphal. Remember Paul Westphal?
Yeah.
Back in the 70s? That dude was a player, man. Yes. He was a player. So I wanted to kind of acknowledge him as a nominee to be the best player out of the Phoenix Suns franchise. Right?
And for those of us – oh, did you have more? Sorry.
Yeah, I have more.
Okay.
I have more. I'm going to keep going, bro. All right? I have like a few more, right?
I think I know two that you're going to name, but go ahead.
Walter Davis, Sweet D.
Walter Davis,
right? Yep. That guy was a baller, man. All right? He's a Hall of Famer, too. So,
very smooth player.
And the thing is, he's before our time, really. I mean, you know, we were kids, like younger kids when this guy was at his peak. You know, I really didn't really start watching basketball, like, you know, religiously until probably 1977. You know, I was 8 years old at that time, and that's when I really, really started watching hoops and fell in love with it from there. But this guy was playing at that time, but I was kind of gravitating to the Warriors, and of course, I think the Blazers were good at that time and the Supersonics. So those were the teams that I was kind of watching. But this guy was a baller, all right? Walter Davis was a baller. So I wanted to go ahead and put him as a nominee. Another guy that I had is Larry Nance, all right? The father of the Nance kid that's playing right now, Larry Nance Jr., right? And then that guy was a dunking machine, right? He was, one of the first guys to be able to dunk with two balls, right? Sean Marion, all right? He was a good Phoenix Sun, all right? And you've already mentioned Amari Stoudemire. Yeah, Kevin Johnson, Devin Booker. A guy that they didn't play a minute for him but got traded was Rajon Rondo. Rajon Rondo got drafted by the Clippers and went to the Boston Celtics, right?
You mean the Suns?
The last two guys that I had on this list were Dan Majerle.
Yep. I knew you were going to bring him up.
And Tom Chambers.
Tom Chambers, yes.
Yep. Right.
For those of you that haven't seen Tom Chambers dunk, you guys need to on YouTube. That dude, I swear, he dunked with his belly button, bro. That dude could get
up. I know. He got up, man. He got up,
But yeah.
So for me, bro, it really came down to three players. It came down to me between and they're all Hall of Famers. That's why I had to pick out of three Hall of Famers. It was down to Walter Davis, Paul Westphal, and Steve Nash. But the guy that I picked was Steve Nash.
I picked Steve Nash as well.
Okay. All right.
We're lining up here. You know, and I picked him. Obviously, I think he's a two-time MVP. One of those times he beat out Shaq, which Shaq still is bitter about that. But, you know, I think from an organizational franchise, I think Steve Nash was the best player that they've had. You know, obviously, if and when the Suns win a championship, it looks like I lost Eddie here for a minute. All right. Well, anyway, if and when the Suns win a championship, I think that'll change. But Steve Nash is the one that I chose. All right. Let's see if we give Eddie here a couple of minutes to get back. In the interim, let's see. We've gone over, just as to highlight, we've gone over the Clippers. Eddie and I picked Blake Griffin. We've gone over the Suns. Eddie had a nice, healthy list there. But we both ended up with Steve Nash. So sometimes Eddie and I we end up with different names and we have to kind of argue our point, at least for the first two organizations that we went through here. We both agreed with Blake Griffin and Steve Nash. Next, I'm going to just make an executive decision, as it were, and we're going to go with the Kings. So the Kings, for my list, at least, and, you know, I did my list a little bit differently than Eddie. Eddie's kind of grabbing some fun facts as to, you know, who maybe drafted them, people to note in their organization. I actually just focused on players that I thought legitimately could be argued that are the best players in the franchise. So I had three players, one of which is Mitch Richmond. Mitch Richmond is known as The Rock. Was traded from the Warriors over to Sacramento after his first year with the Warriors. A huge mistake on the Warriors' part, if you ask me. But Mitch Richmond, a defensive player, you know, at one point Michael Jordan referred to him as the toughest player that he's played with in the NBA, for whatever that's worth. So Mitch Richmond is one of the players that I chose. The other one was Jerry Lucas. So Jerry Lucas played for a couple of different teams, but he did start off with the, I believe it was Kansas City Royals, I think it was the name of the basketball. Hopefully I'm not butchering that, which is where the Kings started. But Jerry Lucas played for them, and a very good player, very good statistics. And then third, who happened to be my selection for the Kings' best player, was the big O, Oscar Robertson. Oscar Robertson was, you know, for those that don't know, you know, he had a lot of before Russell Westbrook kind of took his triple-double, you know, Oscar Robertson was known for his triple-doubles. He was a very good offensive player, very good passer, just a very good player all along. And I picked Oscar Robertson as the best Kings player. So that's my pick. All right, moving on here. Since I don't have Eddie here to argue with me, I'm going to move over to the Golden State Warriors. And so Eddie can catch up when he rejoins. So for the Warriors, again, just want to remind everyone, I picked players that I thought were reflective of the organization. So I'll start with Chris Mullin. You know, one of my all-time favorite players, Chris Mullin, from the, you know, 80s and 90s Warriors, run TMC, as Eddie's affectionately referred to. You know, Mullin was a small forward, good shooter, quick hands, kind of deceptively good on defense. Wasn't a great defensive player, but was very good with his hands. He carried my early fandom for the Warriors, you know, between him and Mitch Richmond that one year and Tim Hardaway. You know, they were kind of my players to watch. From the early championships of the Warriors, there's Rick Barry. Some argue potentially one of the greatest small forwards of all time. Rick Barry was a very complete player. A little bit of a personality, rubbed some people the wrong way, as you may know if you followed anything Warriors. But Rick Barry was another choice that I had, you know. Next was Wilt Chamberlain. You know, Wilt Chamberlain was probably, you know, some would argue one of the greatest centers, one of the most powerful, overpowering centers in the league. You know, you watch highlights of him. He's known for the 100-point game. I mean, he's known as, you know, he averaged, I believe, 50 rebounds a game, or 25 rebounds a game and 50 points a game, I believe, is what he averaged. So he was one of the organization's pillars. All right, we have Eddie back. All right,
dude, man, I'm having problems with the power cord in my, you know, with my computer, and it keeps, like, you know, not charging my computer. And this is the second time this has happened. And I just bought this damn power cord, man. So I'm gonna have to get a new one. So I don't know where you left off, bro.
So I shared with the audience. I went through the Kings. I was starting to go through the Warriors. So let's go back to the Kings. Okay. So quickly, I'm gonna tell you what I told the audience. I had three players. Now I know that you are looking at, you know, who the organization drafted and who are notables. I didn't go that deep in my list. I actually focused on players that I thought, you know, would be the best player of that organization. And I had three players. My three players were Jerry Lucas for Kansas City, right? Mitch Richmond. You know, that name, that still hurts me that I have to say that, but you know,
have to
the audience that
you have to.
And then my pick of the litter, just because I told everybody, that was the big O, Oscar Robertson. So he was my all-time best King player. And those were my three.
Okay.
So if you want to go through your kings, feel free.
Yeah,
to...
so I have Chris Webber.
Okay.
I have Peja Stojakovic.
Yep.
I had White Chocolate.
Yeah.
Mason Williams.
All right.
I had Tyreek Evans. I had DeMarcus Cousins, De'Aaron Fox, Vlade Divac, and then Mitch Richmond.
So Tyreek Evans.
Yep.
Tyreek Evans, just to note, he won Rookie of the Year over Steph Curry.
He did. Isn't that crazy?
That's insane.
That's insane, man.
And he hasn't been in the league in what, 8 years?
A long time.
You know, just goes to show you what those awards mean, you know,
or
what
they can mean. No, it doesn't mean Jack. It doesn't mean Jack. Because if you were to restart that draft all over again, Steph Curry would be the number one pick.
Absolutely.
And he was number seventh pick, right? He'd be the number one pick by like a landslide, right? Blake Griffin was the number one pick in that draft.
Yes, and so, it would be close.
Yeah, for sure, man. All right.
So you didn't have Oscar Robertson or Jerry Lucas.
I did not. Okay. And you can make an argument that so let me ask, who did you pick?
Oscar Robertson, the big O.
Okay.
The triple-double machine.
I picked Mitch Richmond, and I think you didn't want to pick Mitch Richmond because he's a warrior to you.
well, I mean.
But Big O is a better player, right?
Yes.
He played for the Royals, I think.
The Royals, the Kansas
City Royals, which is technically the Kansas, you know, the Kings franchise.
The Kings
it's like the Philadelphia Warriors, right?
Correct.
I'm going to go with you because I did omit Oscar Robertson, and that was a bad omission on my part. So I would put Oscar Robertson or Mitch Richmond because he is, they're both in the Hall of Fame. All right, for one. So I want to know Mitch Richmond is a Hall of Famer, and so is the Big O. But Big O was he's a transcendent player at this time. He was a big dude, and he was essentially, kind of a Luka Doncic kind of size player at the time, right? Yep. That's why they call him the Big O, right? And they have a similar skill set, although Luka's probably a better shooter, but probably I say Robertson's probably a better defensive player overall. So, but anyway, I agree with you, bro. Let's settle on Oscar Robertson. All right. So we have right now for the Clippers, Blake Griffin. We also have for the Suns, Steve Nash. And then for the Kings, we have the Big O, Oscar Robertson. All right. You want to go to the Lakers or the Warriors?
No, I was on the Warriors. So when you jump back on, I was on the Warriors.
Okay.
I'll give you who I unveiled.
All right.
So I unveiled three of my four players. I think my fourth one, everyone here is going to guess who the fourth one is. So it's not relevant. But I brought up Chris Mullin. To me,
the key figure
of the Run TMC years. He was a player, like I said, very good shooter, good offensive player, deceptively good on defense, had very quick hands. Feet were slow, but his hands were good. He could pick the ball out of a lot of people's pockets. Then I had Rick Barry, obviously the first championship of the Warriors. Some would argue potentially the greatest small forward of all time. We're not going to get into that, but Rick Barry, a champion, great to the organization. I had mentioned him. And as you were coming on, I was talking about Will Chamberlain, right? 100 points per game.
Sure.
Probably before Shaq, probably.
He is
before Shaq, the most dominant player in the NBA, right?
He was
just a beast. And then I didn't get to my fourth player who everyone who's watching is going to guess. Obviously my fourth player is Steph Curry. Four-time champion. Obviously we have other notables that we can have, and I'm going to leave that piece to you. But I put those four players as actual people that I think one could argue are the greatest players in that organization's history.
Yep. Okay. So I definitely have a lot more, and I want to just do this because,
Warriors. No, I think it's fun. I think it's fun that you're doing it.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't want to steal your thunder.
And just so you know, the Warriors, I think the Warriors are the one of the three or four original franchises in the NBA. Right, so they have
Warriors.
one of the longest histories. The Celtics, I think the Knicks, and I think the Warriors are the three oldest franchises in the NBA.
Yep.
There might be one more, but I just don't remember who it is. It might be the Lakers. It might be the Lakers.
They're from Minneapolis.
Yeah, so it probably is the Lakers. Those are the four oldest franchises, in the entire NBA. So there's a lot of history in those sports franchises, and probably the best players in those sport franchises, right? Because they're the longest, right?
Yep.
So But okay, so I definitely have the same players that you pointed out, but I also wanted to kind of have some notables out there. So I have Tom Mascheri. His name is in the banners at the arena, all right, because he's a Hall of Famer. You have Klay Thompson, who is, you know, going to be a Hall of Famer, although he's no longer with the Warriors, you know, fellow Splash brother Steph Curry. Then you also have a Hall of Famer, Nate Thurmond. He's a Hall of Famer, right? Yes, everybody that we have named outside of Klay Thompson is a Hall of Famer. And Klay Thompson more than likely will be a Hall of Famer. Will be, right? Yep. Then you got Jamal Wilkes. Silk, right? They call it, and he came from the Warriors, was on the championship squad, and then, you know, went to the Lakers thereafter. And he's probably more notable as a Laker just because they had a longer, you know, history with the Lakers, but he came from the Warriors. That's who they drafted. Robert Parrish, right? Robert Parrish, the guy that is known as the chief, who became like this, you know, legendary center, you know, for the Boston Celtics outside of Bill Russell, right? Being this legendary center. And, of course, you know, we also gave away the draft rights to get Kevin McHale because of Joe Barry Carroll, right? That's how The golden years, right? We gave away the Hall of Fame front court to the Boston Celtics or the Warriors. You know, it just shows how inept freaking ownership was back in the day, man. So, so another guy that was from that same team that played with Robert Parrish is Purvis Short. Remember Purvis Short?
Yep.
The rainbow guy. He had he had the rainbow shot, the highest shot I've ever seen to this day, right?
And he would shoot from here.
Yeah.
He would shoot from here. You know, he's like,
it's crazy, man.
Yeah.
So I have him, and then I had Tim Hardaway. Okay. Although he's probably more noted as a Miami Heat just because he, you know, won one over there.
Well, he got more publicity as a Heat, but
he did because of the East Coast bias, right? We talked about one of our old podcasts, and he was one of the examples, right? You mentioned him.
Bernard King was another one.
Right? Right, exactly. For the East Coast bias that you saw. All right, yep. So then another guy I want to point out is Latrell Sprewell. All right, he was another one.
The Choker.
We cannot forget Todd Fuller, bro. We cannot forget Todd Fuller, okay? Can you imagine, dude? You know who got drafted after Todd Fuller? Two Hall of Famers.
Yes, I do. Someone we're going to be talking about in a minute here.
Right. Two Hall of Famers. Steve Nash and Kobe Bryant were drafted right after Todd Fuller. All right? That goes to show you. We missed out on two Hall of Famers, man.
So as a Warrior fan, we refer to this as the Chris Cohan years. Oh, and for those of you that have...
Great timeout, bro.
Yep. For those of you that have crappy organizations and have never won anything, I'm look right at the camera here. I'm telling you this. Get a new owner. The owners make all the difference in the world, bro.
It's true.
I'm just telling you.
It's true.
It starts with the owners.
Right. So, and then the last guy, I mean, it's a big list, man. I mean, I just wanted to give shout outs to all these guys, right? Because they're all deserving to be in the conversation. The last guy I'll put up there, and I don't think he's a Hall of Fame player, but he definitely was a Hall of Fame dunker, and that's Jason Richardson. I definitely have him in there. But my four were the same four to choose from that you had, right? I had Steph Curry, Rick Barry, Will Chamberlain, and Chris Mullin, right? Now it comes down to the drum roll. Yes. Who did you pick?
I struggled a little with this, but I had to go with the player that got us the most championships, the player that revolutionized the game, the player that everyone is mimicking now in the NBA. I mean, he's just, you know, he's an impact. And that's Steph Curry. I mean, you can't not pick Steph Curry, like in my head.
I mean, and I'm the same way. It was really down between Will Chamberlain and Stephen Curry. Yep. That's what it really came down to.
Correct.
But Stephen Curry is transcendent. I mean, you can argue that Wilt Chamberlain was at that time, but you know there were other players similar to him after, right? There hasn't been another player like Steph Curry yet. Although Trae Young is the closest you will see to the skill set that he has, but it's not the same.
It's not the same. And what's funny is they're kind of polar opposites, right? Wilt Chamberlain's success came from his dominance. And Steph's success came from his skill.
Correct.
Kind of like at opposite ends, you know, like and I'm sure we can have this conversation again, but you and I have had many conversations around, is physical domination a skill?
Yeah. You know? And it's not. It's not.
You know, like if you put me playing basketball with a bunch of fifth graders, you know, because I'm so much bigger than, you know, everybody else, am I really talented, or is it just that I'm just bigger than everyone else?
Right. That's kind of the argument that you have for Shaq, really.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So. And speaking of attention whores, you know, to some degree, it's an argument I have for LeBron. To some degree.
That he's a fame whore?
No. That he's stronger than everyone.
Oh, yeah. That he's bigger. Yeah.
He's bigger,
yeah.
You know. And again, I don't want to belittle, you know, part of that specialness of Shaq and LeBron is that not only are they bigger, but they have skill, right? They're skilled big guys, and you don't typically put those things together. But there's a lot of players in the NBA that you can question. With Steph, and again, this is not me on my soapbox going, Steph's the best player ever, nothing like that. But Steph's done everything purely on skill. It has never been on physical dominance of any level. You know, it's all been just his skill.
No, I agree, man. So we picked Steph Curry for the Warriors.
Yeah. Steph Curry, all right. Yep. All right.
So we have the team, the last team that we have to pick a player from, right? And the last team is the Lakers. You know, the legendary Los Angeles Lakers.
Oh, and Lord.
This list was not as long as the Warriors, but every one of these guys is a freaking Hall of Famer, man. All right? Every one of them. So do you want me to go first?
Yeah, well, I took the Kings and the Warriors. I went first, so go ahead. You take the Lakers.
All right, so
I only have four, and I'm sure the four that I have, you're absolutely going to cover, so go ahead.
Okay, so I also had Wilt Chamberlain here as well, okay?
Okay, I did not. I thought about it, but again,
I put him on there.
Dipping. Yeah.
I had him on there. I had him on both because he's representative of both, right? He was dominant in both, but, you know, probably more dominant as a Philadelphia Warrior than a Los Angeles Laker. All right, next guy I put up there is James Worthy. Another guy I put up there is Elgin Baylor. Then I had Gail Goodrich.
Good call.
I also had Jerry West.
I had Jerry West. That's the first one that I have that you've named.
Okay. Now it gets down to the nitty gritty, bro.
Yes.
Magic Johnson.
Yes, I had Magic.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I had Kareem.
And Kobe Bryant.
And I had Kobe.
All right. Anybody that I missed that was on your list?
No. I had. So my four were Kobe, Magic, Kareem, and Jerry West.
Okay. All right, man. All right. So now it comes down to who do we pick out of these four as the all-time best player out of the franchise of the Los Angeles Lakers? Again, this is going to be a polarizing choice. Whoever we pick, because there's going to be a lot of people out there that are not going to agree with our pick, no matter which way we go. Right?
I'm not sure I agree with my pick. Right? I mean, to be honest with you, so you know this more than any other organization really got me thinking. What do I mean by great? Do I mean has brought the most success to the organization? Do I mean statistically they were the best player? So for me, you know, like they're just all three of them are very special players, right? Kobe, Magic, and Kareem, like very special players, you know, and I don't want to get into a big diatribe. So I'm just going to tell you that anyone who's heard this podcast before, I've argued this guy could potentially be the greatest NBA player in the NBA, in the history of the NBA. I've said it many times. I think as much attention as he gets, I still think he's very underrated. He doesn't get as much pub as other players, and that's Kareem. And so I picked my greatest player as Kareem. That being noted, I will acknowledge that Kareem was nothing till Magic got there. Magic made the Showtime Lakers. Magic was the instrumental piece in, you know, taking advantage of all of that. But Kareem won a championship before he joined the Lakers.
He did. Yeah.
And then you have Kobe, who anybody who lives in L.A., it's Kobe everything. Kobe this, Kobe that, Kobe, you know, the mentality of a bulldog. Never quit. Trained all the time, you know, was always about competing, you know. So to me, this was really, really hard. But I stuck with Kareem because I just think he brought same amount of championships to the Lakers that those other two players did. But I thought, you know, defensively, he was a stalwart. Offensively, he was unstoppable. You know, he had an incredible collegiate career. He won a championship before he joined the Lakers. And when I started kind of bubbling all these things together, he was the player that I ended up with. But I will hear anybody out who wants to yell at me, no, it's Magic, or no, it's Kobe. I get it.
All right, man. So I was torn in between Kobe and Kareem, right? Okay. And I chose Kobe.
Yes.
And the reason why I chose Kobe is, one, he played his entire career with the Lakers.
Yes.
Right? Which is noteworthy. There's not many players in history that can say that. I mean, Magic did too, right? But then, you know, he got, you know, he had the AIDS or HIV, and then he had to retire, right? It was cut short. And he probably would have, you know, if his career wasn't cut short, he might have been the guy, honestly, right? And I chose Kobe, too, because there's an argument to be made that as great as Kareem was, he needed somebody else to get him the ball to be great, right? I mean, he could do a lot of things like as a center would, right? I mean, he does all the other dirty work, you know, rebounds, pass. He's a very good passer, by the way, very underrated passer. He's also a very good rebounder, right? For, you know, of course, he's a 7'2 guy. He should be a good rebounder, but he was just a good all around rebounder and a very, very good defender. So he was a very good all around player. The only thing that he didn't do well was dribble the ball, right? That's it. It's because of, you know, his size at the time, and they didn't really teach big men to be like the big men they are today, right? Big men today can, you know, dribble very well. A lot of them like guards, right? So I picked Kobe because he wasn't reliant on somebody getting him the ball to be effective. He could create his own shot. He can also make a shot from somebody passing it to him, whereas Kareem was more dependent on someone getting him the ball. If he wasn't the centerpiece of the offense, he probably wouldn't be as great as he's noted today. He'd still be good. I just don't think he'd be good. If the offenses were run differently like they are run today, he probably wouldn't be as great. So that's the reason why I picked Kobe over Kareem, but it was down to them too, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a fair argument. My counter to that would be, we don't, like, I don't know, like, could Kareem play like Wemby had he been asked to do so? Right.
I don't know. I don't know either.
So it's hard for me to penalize Kareem playing in an era where those things weren't asked of him. He wasn't asked to bring down the ball.
I hear you.
He wasn't asked. But I hear you. I hear in terms of, so if we look at this from a one-on-one perspective.
You're right. That's the thing. You have to think about
you're
that
right,
too.
You're right. Then I agree with your Kobe argument, right? Because I think Kobe would be a much more impactful one-on-one player than Kareem would be. Now, you're not stopping Kareem's points, but he's not going to be great at chasing you.
Correct.
If I had like a Steph Curry Kareem one-on-one, for example,
right?
Steph's going to win because he's going to just keep making three-pointers.
Right.
So for every Kareem's two, I'll just make three, and eventually I'll win because three is more than two.
And he doesn't have the agility like in Kareem. Right.
Correct.
He's not as quick footed nor as athletic as an Akeem. Right. So I mean, this organization could be the exception on how we pick, right? Because we could easily pick Kareem as the best player of all time on the Lakers, but for the one on one, we pick Kobe. But our rules were that out of the five that we picked the best one out of that group, right?
Correct.
But this would be the one organization, in my opinion, that would trump it. But I don't want to trump. I don't, you know, we would have to go back and revise everything else, and I don't want to do that. So we just have to decide.
No, I don't. And we're dismissing Magic as though he were,
like,
you know,
right?
Like we're not even included. And he could easily be the greatest player of this organization. That's riches beyond riches right there. Just those three players.
I mean, Kareem has six championships. Kobe has five. Magic has five.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. I mean, and we're picking a guy. I mean, I'm picking a guy that has one less championship than the guy who's the most in the organization.
Correct.
So, and like I said, I gave you my arguments as to why we just have to decide between us.
Yeah,
I'm inclined either way, bro. Honestly, I had Kobe Bryant, and Kobe Bryant only because he played his entire career with that organization and is highly regarded as, you know, an all-time Laker. And I would say that, you know, my heart is there with him too, because, you know, he tragically lost with his, he lost his life with his daughter, yeah. Man. That was heart-wrenching, bro. Heart-wrenching. Woo, man.
So I'll tell you this. Let's do this. So looking at one-on-one, we agree Kobe would be the better one-on-one player.
Yep.
We agree with that.
Yes.
But if we look at the Pacific's starting five,
yes,
in the terms of the competition,
yep,
we have Steve Nash and Steph Curry as
our, yeah, we don't have a center.
That's a small backcourt.
Yeah.
We got Oscar Robertson and we got Blake Griffin.
Right.
We could put Kobe in there, but we'd have no center.
Right.
You know, we could put Kareem in there. So the question's going to be, do we want to focus on the starting five or do we want to focus on the one-on-one?
Okay, so here's the question, bro. If we put Kareem in there, we know he has no shot of beating Steph Curry. We know he has no shot of beating Steve Nash.
No.
He would be able to beat Blake Griffin. And Oscar Robertson, he probably wouldn't be able to beat. All right? Now, you put
Kobe. He might be able to beat him depending on who takes out the ball first.
Right. Okay, but then you put Kobe in there.
Correct.
Kobe and Steph would be a very good matchup. Kobe and Steve Nash would also be a very good matchup, but I think Kobe would beat him. Kobe would run circles around Blake Griffin, and Kobe probably would be able to contain Big O.
Yes.
So that's the thing, right? So that's what I'm saying. This is the one organization that's going to be the caveat for us. I mean, could be, but I think we have to settle on one, bro.
And we do.
And the thing is that with your argument of how the team is constructed, we never used that as an argument in the past. We just picked the best, and we didn't really take into consideration how the roster were constructed. We could do that later. We can always do that later, bro.
Okay, so if we're going by the best by today's standards,
yes,
right, which means the best well-rounded player, the best, then we'd have to go Kobe. I agree. Kobe's the more complete player.
Yeah, yeah, and it sucks to pick
that. That hurt. I'll be honest with you. It hurts me.
It did too, man. It did because yeah. we both think Kareem could be highly regarded as the best player of all time.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. And I've continuously said that he should at least be in that discussion. But you know, okay, we'll go Kobe. We'll go Kobe.
Right. I know we're like, but again, we can always come back and revisit it, man. All right. So yeah, there you have it, man. All right. So now there you have. Let's pick the best one-on-one player amongst this group. All right. So first, Blake Griffin is probably omitted.
Yeah.
Okay. Two, Steve Nash.
Probably omitted.
Big O.
See, I don't have enough footage in my mind of Big O to kind of make this call one way or the other.
Yeah, I don't either, but I think that he would make it very interesting too because he's the bigger, stronger guard. That would cause problems for either one of these players, the last two players that on this list besides Big O, and that's Curry and Kobe Bryant. I think that Curry would beat Big O.
Yes.
To me, it comes down to Curry and Kobe Bryant. It comes down to those two.
But to me, it's Kobe.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think so, too. I think Kobe Bryant would beat Curry in a one-on-one. So,
I agree because I think Kobe could defend some three-pointers. And yep. I think Steph would have a hell of a hard time stopping Kobe at anything.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it, man. We had our, I mean, that was a good one, bro, right? This was a good
one. For those of you that claim homerism, I want you to know that it's breaking my heart that I got to pick a Laker.
I know.
Or a Warrior. But the facts are the facts.
Our final list, man. So it came down to the Clippers, Blake Griffin. We had Steve Nash representing the Suns. We had Big O representing the Kings. And we had the Stephen Curry representing the Warriors. And then we had the Lakers represented by Kobe Bryant, although we had an argument to be made between him and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. With a close third to Magic Johnson. So out of this group, we picked Kobe Bryant as the best one-on-one player out of the Pacific Division, and he will be part of our tournament. So that's pretty much covers it for this segment. Let's go on to our rookie watch in conference seedings. This is the fan, and this is a quick segment, man. We're already at an hour and 25 minutes, and unfortunately, you know, 5 minutes was, you know, because of my technical difficulties, which I've had again, right? So, anyway, sorry about that, man. I'm gonna see if I can get this thing resolved, man. You know,
good. Everyone out there got 5 minutes of me by myself. I'm sure they love it.
All right, so let's go to the since we forgot about the standings last time, let's do the standings first.
Oh, let's do the standing. By the way, all I'm seeing here is that last week I was 500 points behind. Now I'm 700. I'm not liking the trajectory.
I know the trend is pretty brutal, man. You probably have to zoom that out a slightly. But, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, what we've shown here is that if this is fluctuating on a week-to-week basis, right? I mean, you know, the right now, if we look at the East versus the West, we are definitely a lot closer and be able to pick, you know, with a 75-point maximum for each of these conferences.
Yep.
You know, we are essentially halfway, more than halfway there. So we're batting, you know, 50% or 500 in the East, and we're like really bad in the West, right? I mean, there's, yep, if you look at all the zeros in our point system, there are a lot of zeros on the West versus the East. I mean, there's more crooked numbers in the East, man. But, you know, the bottom line is that things are starting to shape up. You know, the Bucks have moved up, right? They have moved up, and both of us have them in the top five, right? So that's correct, helping both of us, right? The correct Cavs, no one saw that. Celtics, we knew that they were going to be good. And the Knicks, we both had them at number three, which is exactly, you know, actually, no, we didn't have the Knicks at number three. We had the Sixers at three, okay? We had the Sixers at three, and that's killing us, but we had the Knicks at number two. The Knicks, I don't think, are going to catch up to the Celtics. They're not.
So I had the Cavs at four, which doesn't help me at all, but you had the Cavs all the way at seven.
I know. So, but we both get 0 points because it's
correct.
You know, it's more than two slots away, right?
I got to find a way to make this magic happen. Come on, Cavs, drop the two.
But, you know, what's interesting is that the Raptors, we have them, you know, actually the Hornets, we had them, you know, lower. Actually, the Hornets, we predicted, you know, them to be, I predicted them to be at the 12th seed. You had them at the 13th seed, which is exactly where they're slotted. All right. They moved a little bit this week. And then, you know, the bottom line is that we're going to get closer at the end of the season on the East. All right. For sure. But, you know, at the overall total right now, bro, it's close. Now you're down 2 points. Whereas last week you were up 8 points, right? You were up like seven or 8 points last week.
This is going to swing. Yeah.
Yeah. This is going to swing a lot every week, man. So, but anyway, let's go to the rookie draft, man. So now we can go ahead and scroll all the way over to game 40, you know, 38 to 43, even though we're not there yet. But you're going to see here, bro, like in game 38, it's like a, you know, 55-point, 56-point difference right there, right? Then you got to game 39, it's a 100-point difference.
Yeah, you're destroying me.
And then game 40, it's like, you know, 40 something, you know, points. So, you know, it's because of my big three, bro. You look at game 39. I mean, you know, everybody there scored more than 20 points fantasy wise, other than Cody Williams, right? Whereas your team, everybody was not even double digits except for Kyle Filipowski. So this one is
second rounder.
Yeah, your second rounder is carrying you from game 39, right? But, you know, the thing is, what's killing you, dude, it's the playing time, bro. You know, you picked players that played very well in the summer league, but just for whatever, you know, there's been injuries as well, you know, with Filipowski. Reece Arshay is injured right now. That's why you see zeros right now in game 40 and game up to game 42 for Reece Arshay. Shepherd hasn't cracked the rotation, man. I mean, he gets garbage time, unfortunately. Muzelis has been playing. He does get his minutes. So, but you need one of your guys to crack the starting lineup. Whereas I have three guys in the starting lineup right now.
Correct.
And Edie, Starry, Castle. And that's
the difference. No, that is the $1 million difference. I mean, had I known what I know, I would have just picked all of the Washington Wizards players and put them all here because they're all starting. All the rookies, it seems like. But you're right. I mean, some of it has to do with starting. Obviously, you know, I don't know if Reece Arshay is starting or not, but you know,
he does. He does start.
He does, and I think he's the only one.
He's the only one that starts in your team. But you can see from the point totals right now, Sar is at 1,069 points right now.
Correct.
Castle is on his way to get to 1,000, probably within the next couple of weeks. Edie's been in and out because he's hurt. Jamal Shedd is, you know, respectable. He would be the third highest guy on your team right now, Jamal Shedd, because, you know, he's right there with Filipowski. But Connect is still, you know, the second highest on your team. So this one, you're going to need injuries, bro, and you're going to need these guys to.
Well, one thing we got to talk about here in the coming weeks is the draft deadline, right, or the trade deadline, you know, and depending on what some of these teams do, they may open the door for some players. You know, Buzelis might, you know, get into the starting lineup. You know, obviously part of the strategy here of picking were, you know, I know for me, it was trying to pick players that I think would get minutes, you know, I underestimated how good Houston was going to be.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that they're good is really killing me on that front.
Yeah.
And then, Connect, you know, he's getting some play time. Filipowski's obviously getting, so, you know, the three sorriest teams that I have are getting good minutes. And then Buzelis is really the one that's kind of screwed me a little bit. He's not playing as good as I thought he would.
Yeah, all right, man. But dude, this pretty much it, man. We did this in an hour and a half, bro. All right. I mean, 5 minutes of it was, you know, me coming off the, you know, I gotta fix this damn thing, man. It's pissing me off. But you know, we went ahead and covered the surging teams in both the East and the West. We covered a total of five teams, three from the East and two from the West. We went ahead and dovetailed into this 6 to 7 week quest of determining the best overall one-on-one player. We covered the Pacific Division this week, and we covered, you know, we covered the Golden State Warriors, the Sacramento Kings, the Phoenix Suns, the Lakers, and then, you know, the last team of the West. I forgot who the last team was.
The Clippers.
Yeah, the LA Clippers. So, and then from this group, we had, for the Lakers, we picked Kobe Bryant, although that was a tough discussion. For the Kings, we picked Oscar Robertson. For the Clippers, we picked the Blake Griffin, and then we picked for the Suns, Steve Nash, and then the Warriors, Steph Curry. And then the best final, the best one-on-one player amongst this group. And it was interesting because if we had picked Kareem, it would have been a different player. But we picked Kobe Bryant, and he's actually the best one-on-one player out of this group. So we're going to go ahead and cover next week. We're going to go ahead and cover, let's see, who do we want to cover next week? Let's cover the, which one should we cover? Let's cover the Central of the Eastern Conference.
Central, right? Okay.
So we'll cover the Central, which is the Cavs, the Bucks, the Pacers, the Pistons, and the Bulls, right?
Yeah,
and
I wonder which Bull we're going to pick.
Right, that's the easy one, bro. I mean, we'll probably have one name on that list, bro. But anyway, so, you know, we covered all this stuff. Our intent is to go an hour. We went an hour and a half here this week, but, you know, we've had a fun topic here. We see that a lot of viewership in the last couple of weeks because I think people appreciate this topic. I think people in general like to see, you know, lists like this, the best of all time or whatever, right? People just gravitate to this stuff, and I'm glad we're doing this. It's a fun process, man.
I agree. I'm having fun, and if you think differently, you know, feel free to comment, you know. Throw
yeah, for sure. No, it's fun, man. I mean, I gravitate
someone, to You know, Eddie and I are pretty old, but if you're an older head than us and, you know, you forgot so-and-so.
Yeah, tell us. You know, tell us. Put in the comments section.
Where was George Mikan on the Minneapolis Lakers? You know,
yeah, right.
Great, you know. So, you exactly, know, something like that, yell at us, you know.
We'll hear you out. But, you know, anyway, so this is episode 34 of Buzzer Beaters. We are the Cisco Kids, Eddie Aparicio, Anthony Tuan Corral. And we are a podcast that's brought to you by gremlingsmedia.com. You can find us on gremlingsmedia.com. You can find us on YouTube, Pandora, X, Facebook, pretty much any podcast outlet you can think of. You can find us. Just make sure you call out Gremlings Media where you can find us. All right. Anyway, this is Anthony Tuan Corral and Eddie Aparicio, and we are signing off. Have a good week.